Good morning, everyone. I want to introduce Carrie Burse, who is the president of Krauss Health Foundation and a TMR member who has agreed to introduce John Wildhack.
Thank you, Eileen. I'm very pleased today to introduce our speaker, both as a member of TMR and as a member of the team at Krauss Hospital, which is the official hospital of SU Athletics. A uniquely qualified executive with a vast knowledge of and a passion for Syracuse University athletics, John Wildhack was named SU's 11th Director of Athletics in July 2016. A veteran leader at ESPN, John most recently served as the network's Executive Vice President for Programming and Production. He was responsible for oversight of all ESPN and ABC game, event, and studio production work for domestic and international television and radio networks, as well as programming acquisitions, rights holder relationship management, and scheduling. A native of Buffalo, New York, and a 1980 alumnus of the Newhouse School of Public Communications with a Bachelor of Arts in Telecommunications, John joined ESPN in its first year of operation immediately following his graduation from SU. During his distinguished career at ESPN, he held a number of critical leadership roles and was responsible for a number of firsts at the network, including producing ESPN's first live regular season college football game in September 1984 and its first live NFL game in August 1987. Now at SU, John is responsible for leading the daily operations of a 20-sport athletics department with more than 550 student athletes. He oversees a team of coaches, administrators, and staff that foster an environment for student athletes that maximizes their performance in the classroom and on the playing field, preparing them for future success. Please join me in welcoming to the TMR podium, John Wildhack.
Carrie, thank you for that very gracious introduction. If I ever need an agent, I'm going to hire you. It's good morning, everyone. It's a pleasure to be here today to represent Syracuse Athletics. A little bit about additional about my background is our family. We have very close ties and a real passion for the university and for the community. My dad did his undergraduate work here at Syracuse University in the War Years, World War II War Years. My oldest sister graduated from SU. My older brother graduated from SU. My two nephews are recent graduates of Syracuse University. And my 13-and-a-half-year-old son has already committed to attend Syracuse University. And that is a binding commitment. So it's a place that means a great deal to my family, to me. We have a real passion for it. My wife did not go to Syracuse University. She went to Rollins College, which is a small liberal arts school in Orlando. But Amy quickly adopted, you know, Syracuse as her school, and orange and blue is her favorite colors. So we have really enjoyed our relocation to Central New York. You know, we are happy to be here, and the community has been incredibly gracious to Amy, to our sons James and Tommy, and to me. The university community has been incredibly gracious as well and made us feel welcome. And it's this community is the soul and the fabric and the kindness and the goodness of the people is something that I think is somewhat unique and we should be very, very proud of. And I know we're proud to be part of it. I don't move much since I spent my entire career at ESPN. This is the first move in 35 years in I tell people, and it happens to be true, is the only place I would have left ESPN for was to come back to Syracuse. I had no desire to leave ESPN. I had no desire to go anyplace else. I didn't want to work for another media company. I worked for the best media company in the world, in my opinion, in ESPN, and the only place I would have left it for is to come back here. So You know, this is really a place that's incredibly important to me and that I feel very passionate about. Now, I have the privilege every day to work with a talented group of people in athletics, from administrators to coaches to our training staff to sports medicine, our academic support services, all-encompassing communications group, marketing, all-encompasses about 250 people. And what's great is to see the passion that they have every day. And the passion is, again, about the university and about the 600, almost 600 student-athletes that we have. And we have a very simple mission statement that my senior team, where there's about 13 of us who comprise my senior staff, that we created not long after my arrival, and I will read it to you, and it's one that really kind of gives us is the guiding light of what our job is to do every day. And the mission statement is to create and foster a culture of academic and athletic excellence which prepares student-athletes as leaders in our global society. And we take that very, very seriously. It's more than words on a piece of paper. Before every staff meeting in the football auditorium, on the video screen above, is our mission statement. So as people come into the room, they see that. And I want them, and I repeat this often, the mission statement. I want people to really live it. That's what we do. And the emphasis is both on academic and athletic excellence. We want an environment where our student-athletes, where they realize their full potential, academically and athletically. And it can be somebody who's gifted enough to ultimately play pro. It can be someone who's academically gifted. We had Cam McPherson, a Rhodes Scholar candidate, our starting tight end for football this past year. In some cases, we have kids. They are, you know, first-generation college students in their family. And what an example they are setting for their family, for their siblings, for their cousins, and what an opportunity for them. And it's our job to work with them and to give them the guidance and the support, but also hold them accountable, you know, to get as good an education as they possibly can. And athletically, we compete in the ACC, which is arguably the best athletic conference and academic conference in the country. So we want to compete and have excellence and have success at the highest level possible, both academically and athletically. And I'll give you some statistics, because we just got recently our academic highlights for fall semester 2016. This is for all our student athletes. Their cumulative GPA was a 3.03. That's pretty darn good. Men's basketball had their highest GPA ever for fall semester, best GPA ever. Men's crew and men's soccer had their highest GPA in a fall semester in the last 10 years. Women's soccer, the team, cumulative GPA of the team was a 3.49. Men's crew, 3.3. 11 of our athletic teams had a GPA of 3 or above. 27% of our student athletes had a GPA of 3.5 or higher. And 56% of the student athletes had a GPA at 3.0 or above. So our student athletes, they're doing really well academically. And many of them are very, very challenging and very rigorous academic setting. And I'm incredibly proud of them. And one of the great parts of my job, and I think probably what I enjoy most, is when I get to meet some of the student athletes and spend some time with them. And they're just, they're a really, really impressive group of young people. And I was with Zaire Franklin, our starting linebacker, who was also third team All-ACC this year. And Zaire is a great kid. And I kid Zaire all the time. I said, you're going to be president of either a company or the country someday. And that's how impressive he is. And to be around kids like that, and some of the freshmen I've been around are also, you know, terrific. In our fifth year players, I've gotten to know Andrew White a little bit, who came here, you know, from Nebraska and didn't enroll until late August. And he is just a really, really smart, thoughtful young man. And we were at the women's game a couple weeks ago. We just sat together and talked for about 25 minutes, and he was telling me how much he enjoyed his experience here at Syracuse, and he said, Mr. Wild, they all call me Mr., make me feel like I'm old. And he said, Mr. Wild, he said, the only thing I regret is, he said, I wish I didn't come here as a freshman. He said, you know, every other place I've been, they preach that it's family, they tell you it's family. He said, this is a family. He said, the basketball program's a family, the coaching staff is a family, the athletic department. He said, I never sat with my athletic director at Nebraska or Kansas like I'm doing with you and just talking. And that's, you know, that's part of our job. And when you have the opportunity to do that and you get to know these kids, it's really, really, you know, it's gratifying to be able to work with them and hopefully make a positive influence on their lives at Syracuse. And I think I've told the chancellor and I told the board of trustees at our board retreat in January, in some respects, our most recent alums can be our most impactful alums, whether they're in athletics or not, because their experience is fresh at Syracuse. And if we have 22, 23, 24-year-old young people who know prospective students and are telling prospective students at Syracuse University, you're going to have a great experience, that's impactful. That's really impactful. And I think we're accomplishing that. In terms of other highlights of my 6 months here, one of the things that I did initially, which was really important, and it was incumbent upon me, really, was to establish a good relationship with Coach Babers. I didn't hire Coach Babers. He didn't hire me. So we decided that he and I are an arranged marriage, and we might as well make it work. And he has been phenomenal to work with. Phenomenal. I really, really enjoy him. I describe Dino as he's a really smart person who happens to be a football coach. He is really, really smart and a very worldly, smart human being. And he's just been great to work with. He's a person of principle. He is truly a leader. And I think we give him the time and the support, which we're doing. I feel very confident that it'll turn the football program around. And it's going to take time. You don't turn a football program around overnight. He and I both have the same philosophy, and that's to build a foundation where we can have sustained success. So we're not going to do it with quick fixes. We're going to do it the right way. We're going to build a foundation. And that's not, you know, that's hard work, but that's good work. And I think it'll pay off. I've worked closely with Coach Boeheim, and I've known Jim for quite a while from my days at ESPN. And we've got his family, my family, have some roots back in upstate New York around the Lions and Newark area where my grandfather where he lived and where my father grew up. But Jim's been awesome to work with as well. And I wish I could take people inside to see the time and the effort that he and his staff have put into this team to try to get them to play to their collective potential, because they are working 7 days a week, you know, around the clock, and just the commitment. And I think if being with the student athletes, getting to know student athletes, is the best part of my job, the one that probably hurts the most is when we don't win. I feel so bad for the kids, and I feel so bad for the coaches, because you see how much work they put into it, and I just, you know, I feel for them. We've got a great coaching staff, a really, really good group of coaches, which is absolutely essential if you're going to have success, because if you don't have the right coach, you're not going to have the right culture. You know, you have the wrong coach who has the wrong values. It can, you know, not only can it impact that sport, but it can impact the entire program, the entire university. We've got a group of coaches that are really committed to the university, that are committed to the academic mission of the university, as well as obviously excellence in athletics. When I recite, as I did the GPA from the past fall, the coaches and their staffs deserve a lot of credit because they stress and they emphasize academics. So they deserve a lot of credit for that. And you'll see coaches where they'll vary practice times, or, you know, a kid will miss first half of practice or something like that for a class or what have you. And there are some coaches, you know, frankly, around the country that probably wouldn't allow that, but our coaches do. So we have a really, really good group of coaches. Among them, Coach Hillsman is awesome to work with. Q is a great guy. He's a character, and I say character in the most positive respect. Awesome, great sense of humor, always thinking, going a mile a minute. Really impressed with the philosophy of his program and what he's built. And he's taken a program now that is, we're going to have sustained success every year. We have two really premier basketball programs. We've had one for the past 41 years with Jim at the helm. Now we have two with Coach Boeheim and Coach Hillsman. And not only the appearance in last year's national championship game, but, you know, we've won, we're ranked the 21st again. We've been ranked for 25 consecutive polls. We got a huge game this Sunday when we host Notre Dame. We decided, my senior staff and I, about a month and a half ago, we said, you know what, we're going to put our shoulder behind the Notre Dame game, and we're going to try to really create an event, a community-wide event. And we've had great support from the business community. We have great support for our marketing partners. Our goal was to set a new attendance record for a women's game at the Dome. The current record is 4,500 for a game against UConn back in 2012 when we hosted them. As of last night, were just over 10,000 tickets sold for Sunday. So, I mean, we're going to have, you know, it's going to be, and the game's nationally televised, so we're going to make a statement to the country that, you know, that Syracuse is a town and a community that supports and embraces women's college basketball. So if you have the opportunity on Sunday, game time's 5:00, it's really going to be, I think it's going to be a special day and a special atmosphere in the Dome. And he's got the number two ranked recruiting class coming in next year, so we lose some great players. We have the best backcourt in the country, and Alexis Peterson and Brittany Sykes. They are, and when I say about impressive young people, those two, they're great. Brittany is, she's got a big personality. She's funny. I mean, if she wasn't a great basketball player, I think she could do stand-up comedy. She is really, really, just a really, really engaging young person, and she was on the search committee that hired me, and I've really enjoyed, you know, getting to know her. But she and Alexis, they're the best backcourt in the country. They're fantastic. It's a fun team to watch. They're up and down. So I cordially invite all of you to come to the Dome on Sunday and help us make some history. It's a busy time for us because obviously both basketball programs are in full swing and headed towards ACC tournament and then NCAA tournament play. Our hockey team's on a nice roll. Coach Flanagan, they've won 6 out of their last 7, second in their conference. Our spring sports have started. Both lacrosse programs opened their season last Saturday with very, very impressive wins at home. Gary Gate and the women's team defeated Boston College as a perennial top 10 team. And Coach Desco and his team defeated Siena handily later Saturday afternoon. So we've got two premier lacrosse programs as well. Our track spring season has started. We've got some really, really accomplished track athletes. Justin Knight finished second in the fall nationally, NCAA Division I cross country. We finished third as a team. He finished second overall. And next year he's likely to win it. And he and his track teammates, both women and men, are off to a fantastic season. So it's a busy time of year, but it's a fun time of year for us. And it's exciting to see our kids compete, and they represent us extremely well. Our other fall sports, both soccer programs, you know, Ian McIntyre, our men's soccer program now is among the elite. The ACC had 8 out of the top 17 ranked teams in men's soccer this year. So that's 8 out of 17. And we're right there. We can play with anybody. We can play with Carolina. We can play with Clemson. And he is a terrific guy, terrific coach. Phil Wedden is building a women's program that I think is going to have success. Good recruiting years there. We've got, out of our 600 student athletes, 60 of them are international. 30 of those are from Canada. Our international student athletes, they represent us very well in the classroom as well. The freshman of the year in the Whitman School of Management last year happens to be our soccer goalie, our starting soccer men's goalie. He's from Germany, and Henrik is, you know, he's going to be like Zaire. He's going to run a company or he'd be president of a country as well. I feel good. You feel good about our future when you're around kids like this. So we've got across, I think, all our sports, I feel really good about where we are competitively. I feel very good about, obviously, and proud of the academic work that our kids do. The biggest challenge, frankly, is football, and we're going to get it right. And when we do, it's going to be a lot of fun to be a part of it. One thing that I really like about Coach Babers is he has a specific philosophy, and if you have a specific philosophy, then you can recruit to that. You can recruit to that system. It's very similar to how Coach Boeheim is recruited. He's got a very specific 2-3 zone. He likes, you know, if you look at our lineup over the years, you know, normally our guards are pretty big, 6'3", 6'4", 6'5". We've got long athletic forwards and, you know, a big man in the post. So he's had a system which has worked. Dino's got a similar system that he wants to play in terms of offense, up-tempo, fast. Coach Hill's been the same way. It's 94 feet, press the entire game, run the floor. And I think the best coaches in any arena, they have a defined philosophy. They know how to recruit to that philosophy, and then they have success with it. So I feel good about football. We had National Signing Day 2 weeks ago on Wednesday. We have 23 young men who will join the program. Four of them are on campus now as early enrollees in January. And it's kind of another brick in building the foundation of a program. And, you know, are any of these kids going to come in and just make an immediate impact next year? Frankly, probably unlikely, but we have kids who are good players, who have the ability to get bigger. They also, academically, they did very well. The incoming football class, their high school GPA is over 3.1. So we have some, you know, we have bright kids coming in. And the most important thing about this class is it will provide us depth. And if you're going to have a winning program, you need quality depth. And that's one of the things that Coach Babers talked about at his press conference on National Signing Day. And we had a great day because we pushed out a lot of content to our fans, primarily in digital media, which is important because we need to do a better job, I think, the athletic department, of engaging with our fans and engaging with the community. And I don't think, I'm not sure that was done as well, frankly, as it should have been in the past. And it's incumbent upon me and it's incumbent upon my colleagues and my department to reach out to the community. It's not the other way around. And I take, you know, I take that very, very seriously. And one of the things we've done is we've established relationships with Center State CEO, and a number of, you know, a number of business leaders around the community, and around the region. And whenever we get to have the opportunity to, you know, share the great stories that is Syracuse Athletics, we're proud and we're privileged to do that. But it's incumbent upon us to do that. So with that, I can talk more and more and more and more, but I'm more interested and I want to give you the opportunity to ask any questions that you have, and please feel free to ask, you know, anything that's on your mind, and I'll answer it as transparently as I possibly can.
Just for those who don't know, Rollins College has one of the most impressive collections of Tiffany glass that I've ever seen. So those who want to visit.
I've got to ask my wife if she knows that when I get home tonight.
I'm going to
ask her how well she knows her alma mater.
Right. But my question relates to the unfortunate incident of these two young men who've been arrested. But beyond that, I don't know their motivation or their background or anything like that. I don't even, it's alleged. I don't know what they really did. But it made me think that we should really consider stipends for kids, and that they come in, they can't take jobs because they're totally immersed in the sport or in academics. So what's your feeling about that?
Well, I think one of the things that the ACC is part of the Power Five conferences, and one of the things that we adopted is we got a little autonomy from the NCAA a few years back is we can now do cost of attendance. So we can provide in some cases, you know, a small stipend. It's incredibly complicated, and I won't take you down that path. So we have a little more flexibility to do things than we did in the past. But you're right. I mean, it's, you know, they're limited in what they, you know, clearly when they're in school, you know, spring and fall semester, the combination of their academic load and their athletic load, you know, leaves them no time. You know, summer, certainly they can do some things, you know, summer jobs and obviously make some money that way. But I think it's one of the things, student athlete welfare overall in all aspects, I think is something that we, and when I say we, it's really the college conferences and the environment we need to focus on, because I'm not sure that's been focused on enough. Because again, first and foremost, we should be there for the student athletes, and that's I think that will gain more traction as time passes, and I think there's a beginning and an understanding that we need to really examine what we potentially can do and what we should do. You know, the two kids, it's, you know, it's an alleged incident. Obviously, when you've got 600 people between the ages of 19 and 22, 23, you're going to have incidents where kids make mistakes. Again, it's all it's alleged at this time, and, you know, they'll go through the judicial process and the same rights that any student would have if they found themselves in a similar situation. But, you know, we obviously, those are not, that's not representative of our kids, and, you know, we'll let the process play out. Yes, sir.
Two questions, unrelated. I'd like to, could you give us an update on any capital improvements plan for the athletic facilities? Mm-hmm. And number two, I assume that you meet periodically with other ADs from across the league, the ACC. Could you tell us what those meetings involve and what initiatives you might be discussing with the other athletic directors?
Sure. I'll answer that part of the question first because it's timely, because last week we had our winter conference meetings down in Fort Lauderdale. It was the ADs, the senior women administrators. Kim Keenan Kirkpatrick is our senior women's administrator. She was down, and Rick Burton is our faculty rep. We were the three representatives. Every school brought those three people: the AD, the sportswoman administrator, and the faculty rep. We did in two and a half days. Well, frankly, we could have done in a day and a half if the meetings were run a little bit more efficiently. We spent a lot of time in those meetings talking about. Well, there's big discussion about HB2, which is the law in North Carolina, because the ACC has pulled all their championships out of North Carolina that were on neutral site. For instance, the ACC championship game, which is scheduled to be played in Charlotte in December, was moved to Orlando this year. So there is a lot of discussion on that, and there's no real update at this time. Commissioner Swofford had met with the governor. He thinks potentially there could be a path to try to have that bill repealed. Obviously, it impacts a number of schools in the ACC who are based in North Carolina, and it impacts, you know, and then by trickle-down, it impacts all schools. So we spent some time on that. We spent a lot of time talking about the ACC Network, which will launch in August of 2019, and the ACC Network will be a dedicated 24-hour network, 7 days a week. Our conference partner is with ESPN, my old company, and it's very similar. The SEC launched a network 3 years ago in partnership with ESPN, and I was part of that business plan and part of that launch. And when I was still at ESPN, I was working on this as well. And that network, the ACC network, will carry probably 400 live events every year, and we'll still have plenty of ACC games on ESPN, on ESPN2, on ABC, particularly for our football. What's going to be great about the ACC network, it's going to give great exposure to our Olympic sports. It's going to be great exposure for our men's soccer, our women's soccer, both lacrosse programs, volleyball as well, and also to be increased exposure for women's basketball. So we're excited about that, and we've all got to be ready to launch that in 2019. Every school's got to be ready because there are obligations that we have in terms of production facilities and that nature. We're blessed because we can leverage the expertise that is the Newhouse School and the facilities that is the Newhouse School. And we've got a small steering committee that Sue Edson, who's our chief communications officer for athletics, that Sue leads with the ACC on the ACC network. And we have two representatives from Newhouse on that. It's going to be a great opportunity for some of Newhouse students because they will actually have the opportunity to produce games, to direct games, in some cases maybe announce some games. So it's going to be great, unbelievable hands-on experience for Newhouse students. Andy Robinson, who's a professor at Newhouse, actually wants to kind of create a course curriculum around the network. And I think it's also going to be a great marketing opportunity for Newhouse. So he spent a lot of time on the ACC network. And then there's you know, on the football front, we spent quite a bit of time discussing. There's kind of a package of legislation that the Football Oversight Committee, which is made up of various ADs and coaches from around the country, small group, have crafted legislation, and it will be voted on in April. And we have two ADs around that committee. Blake James is the AD at Miami, is the chair of it. Really, really good guy. And Todd Stansbury, the new AD at Georgia Tech, is on it. And it's basically revolves around recruiting and allowing prospects to take earlier visits, official visits to a campus that they're interested in, a school that they're interested in, having an earlier signing date. Right now, the signing date's the first Wednesday in February, is to have an early period in December. There's also discussion of adding a 10th assistant coach. Right now, you can only have 9 assistant coaches. So there's discussion about that as well. We spent a lot of time on that, and that kind of then segued into, I think, one of the things that I've learned quickly since I've been here is while you can only have 9 assistant coaches in football, in terms of support staff, outside of that, you are limited only by your creativity for titles and your budget. And, yeah, Alabama, you know, they've got about 45 people, you know, besides their 9 assistants and Coach Saban. And there's real concern that we've got to kind of try to get our arms around this. And before we approve a 10th assistant coach, we've got to address the overall staff size because everybody's got 4 quality control coordinators and, you know, 4 this and 4 that and 4 that. And I did some research when I got here in Clemson and Florida State, who we have the pleasure of playing every year in our division. I'd love to switch divisions, but it takes an 8-6 vote, and I can't get 8 ADs to say, yeah, I'd like to play Clemson every year, and, you know, we'll let Miami come on over somebody. But one of the things that I did is I asked for, give me a rundown on the ACC. Clemson and Florida State, they have 23 people in their football operations area. Again, that's in addition to the 9 assistants and the head coach. And that's 23 that they admit to. So who knows how many others are there. And I asked, I said, how many do we have? And I was told, well, we have 10. And I'm like, you know, we don't need 23. And Dino doesn't want 23. But part of building the foundation is we added some support staff for him. Because if we're going to compete against the likes of Clemson and Florida State and Louisville or Miami, who we play this year, then we've got to at least, you know, have comparable resources. Not exactly the same thing, but comparable resources. So we talked a lot about that as well at the ACC meetings. In terms of capital projects, obviously, you know, the big question is, all right, where are we on the dome and the dome project and the renovation? There's a small committee that I'm part of that continues to look at that. It's along with Pete Salah, Dan French, and a couple others. It's incredibly complicated. And we're taking the time, and we need to make sure we take the time to get it right. One of the things that I have been evangelizing to the chancellor and to members of the board is whatever plan we wind up approving is we've got to upgrade the amenities and the fan experience from the time our guest and our fans, and I call them guests, and that's a little Disney, because at Disney, you know what, they're a guest at the theme park. And that was, you know, that was Disney owned 80% of ESPN, so that was embedded in us. But to me, our fans are our guests. And from the time they walk into the dome until the time they leave, we've got to give them the best experience possible, and we need to improve that experience because it's not, frankly, it's not where it needs to be. And we realize that, and I think they're all sick and tired of hearing me say that in every meeting. But I think we'll do that, and they'll be a big part of it. So that from everything, when you walk in, from amenities to concessions to food options to restrooms to better seating to more comfortable seating, air conditioning, obviously, we've got to upgrade the fan experience. Other capital projects we're looking at is, I just taped yesterday a video which will be sent out to all our athletic alumni, all our donors and supporters. Our Olympic weight room, which is kind of one side of Manly Fieldhouse, that area, that weight room basically serves 400 of our 600 student athletes. And we really need to upgrade and refurbish that, the equipment there. So that's something that I want to try and do and get it done in calendar year 17. And I think one of the areas that we want to be really good in is how we use technology in smart ways to, again, for some of it's our student athlete welfare, whether it's nutrition, whether it's to track their sleeping, whether it's injury prevention, rehab, training, get a sense when to, you know, back off on kids, fatigue, that type of thing. And that's kind of tied to the weight program a little bit, you know, the Olympic weight room at Manly. So that's the one capital project that's out there right now.
I had two questions. One, what's the value of the typical package that you offer to a Division I athlete as a full ride type thing? And the other is, I've wondered why there are only five schools in the ACC that play lacrosse. Why not more of them?
The second question, I don't have a good answer for that. I don't know. Because being lacrosse, it's a great sport, great game. It's growing nationally. It's grown exponentially nationally. You had Denver winning the national championship last year. We have, you know, we have kids on our program from Texas. We have kids in our lacrosse program from Florida. So it's a national sport, and I don't know why other schools haven't adopted it. I wish they would. The five that play, I mean, obviously they are elite. In great competition for us. In terms of the grant and aids, the full value, if somebody's on 100% tuition, room, board, et cetera, that type of thing, it's a little over $60,000 a year. So I mean, it's incredibly valuable. And there are some sports, and there are some instances where we'll offer, you know, a half a grant and aid, et cetera, that type of thing, and how we divide up our scholarships, which is legislated by the NCAA. But it's, you know, it's to for a young person to, if they're on a full grant and aid for 4 years, to get the quality of education that Syracuse offers is a wonderful opportunity. And it's one of the things that Coach Babers, that he talks about with his recruits and their parents, is, you know, you graduate, you have a Syracuse education, you have a degree from Syracuse University, you're going to do well.
So I have a comment and a question. First of all, a comment. I teach at Maxwell, and you know, we encourage our students to really choose the Syracuse area. And I think the fact that you could have gone anywhere and you came back to Syracuse, that's a tremendous testimony, I think, for the Syracuse community. So I applaud you for
that.
And then my question is, when you look at, when you've been exposed to all of the programs across the country, can you just sort of talk about how important it is to the whole community to have this tremendous athletic program at Syracuse University?
Well, I think it's, in some ways, at its heart, Syracuse in some respects a college town, and a great college town, and one of the great college towns and college communities in the country. And I've been fortunate to be in so many, and I think sports is, you know, sports is one of the things that is still kind of a communal experience. And, you know, our society, and it's not necessarily a good thing, is we become more polarized, right, in divisive. One of the things that brings people together is sport. That brings people from different, you know, races, origin, ethnicity, socioeconomic status, sexual orientation, you name it, in all respects of diversity, you know, to come together and experience something. And I think that's, you know, I think that's pretty powerful. And again, I think, you know, we take that seriously. Is stewards of that. I will say just a little bit in terms of the community. This community is great, and we love being here. And it's underrated. It is totally underrated. And it's just I was at a dinner last week, and I described it. I said Syracuse is sneaky good. I mean, it is sneaky good. There's great restaurants. There's great art, theater, culture. I mean, there's so much here to offer. And as we each week, my wife and I, we discover something new. You know, something like, wow, you know, this was great or this was great. So, it's a great community. I think we should be really, really proud about it. And we should evangelize the good that is this community, because it's a great place to live. The educational system is terrific. Our kids have adopted real well. You know, we get a little bit of snow. We had snow in Connecticut too. You know, and I tell every recruiter, their parents, when they ask me about the snow, I said, you know, one thing that snow does, and they look at me and say, what, Mr. Wildeck? What? I said, it melts.
Good morning. Sexual assault on campuses is a very serious issue. And I'd like to hear how the athletic department is addressing that, not only with the athletes, but for them to be role models in the community.
It's a critical issue on college campuses. It's a critical issue in our society, and it's one of the things that we do is you know, each sport. Each program that we have, when we start a semester, you know, we will dedicate, you know, part of a day in terms of, you know, bringing an expert in to educate our student athletes on that specific issue. And they also, as part of that, they know that there's zero tolerance for that. There's zero tolerance for any student at Syracuse University who commits sexual assault. I think clearly there's more awareness, I think, in society over the past several years, which is good, because we need to combat this. We need to face it. We need to combat this, and we need to stop this. And universities can be a part of it. And we expect our student athletes to be good citizens in all aspects. And if they're not, I mean, they won't be here. They just won't. And I think our coaches set a foundation for that as well, in terms of their expectations. And I know our coaches feel very, very strongly that way as well.
Jim Boeheim has announced that he's going to be retiring. What happens if, closer to the date, he decides, you know, I really don't want to do this? Does he have the option of staying? And secondly, if he does leave, is it cast in stone that Mike Hopkins will be his successor?
It was two excellent questions. It was about almost 18 months ago that the university announced that next year would be Coach Boeheim's last year, and that he would be succeeded by Mike Hopkins. And it was one of the questions that I asked when I went through the process. And, you know, there are agreements in place with Coach Boeheim and with Coach Hopkins. They've been approved by the board of trustees. So my job is to execute that transition, to make that transition as seamless and as smooth as it possibly can. And I think, you know, Jim has been awesome to work with in that respect. Mike is incredibly loyal to Jim. He's incredibly loyal to Syracuse. You know, Jim sets the is the gold standard for loyalty. You know, he's been here 55 years since he came on campus as a 17-year-old from Lyons, New York, and he never left. Mike is like Jim's son in that sense. Mike came here from Southern California, and you know, and has never left. And you know, he is so passionate about the program. One of the things that I'm optimistic about in the transition, and I don't. And there, anytime there's a coaching transition, there's challenges. There's no questions. One of the things that makes me optimistic is that Mike has sat and learned from Jim for 20 years. You can't get a better education than that. Mike's also been part of the last three Olympic teams where Jim's been an assistant coach. Mike has been there, so he's seen Mike Krzyzewski work and how Mike Krzyzewski is led NBA superstars to come together as a team for, you know, a three-week period to win gold medals. Mike he's worked with the greatest players in the world. As part of that Olympic experience, he's worked with LeBron James. He's worked with Kobe Bryant. So the knowledge and the experience that Mike has obtained through that and by being with Jim for 20 years, I think bodes well for us. And I feel very good about Mike's vision for the program, his philosophy for the program. My job is to help execute this transition and make it as seamless as possible. I know how important the basketball program is to this community.
I just want you to know I'm available as a power forward for the... my question is, are you focused on the concussion issue that's astounding us across the country for football?
Absolutely. Football's the headliner, but it's, you know, it impacts all sports. And we have a very specific and detailed concussion protocol. It is conservative in the sense that we are going to protect the student athlete, and I'm fine with that. It's to me that's the way it should be. We are, you know, Dr. Tucker, our team physician, is, you know, he is a noted expert in this field nationally. We are part of and have the benefit of ongoing research, you know, that whether it's the NFL that's doing research on CTE, on concussion, et cetera, that type of thing. But it's something we err on the side of conservatism and safety when it comes to this for our student athletes, because it first and foremost is their welfare and their health. That said, particularly with football, it is a collision sport. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, concussions will be a part of football. I don't think you can ever eradicate them per se. And other sports are impacted as well. Among youth sports, soccer. There's actually the greatest number of concussions in youth sports is soccer. So it's an area that we take very, very seriously.
Are you allowed to comment on Coach Boeheim's 1,000th win?
I love that. Well, as part of the NSA settlement, the vacated wins, and so we had to redo our record book, right, to reflect the vacated wins, et cetera, that type of thing. I talked to the NSA. Frank, said I'd be as transparent as I can. I talked to the NSA in November because I knew Mark Emmert and Oliver Luck from my days at ESPN. And I called them and I said, listen, I said, yo, you're putting us in a horrible position because if Jim's going to win his 1,000th game and our community is going to celebrate it and we can't do a darn thing. And I said, yo, that just, you know, that's not right. And I said, yo, can't you give us a 48-hour window to do something to recognize, you know, 1,000 games at one school and, you know, being the NCAA, obviously they came back with the answer being no, because, you know, let's not be logical, let's be illogical. That's an editorial comment on the NCAA. But so we could not do anything officially as a university. What I did tell somebody a couple days after the Virginia game is, I said, you know, I said our fans, they're very smart, they're very sophisticated, and they're exceptional at math, and they proved that at the Virginia game. The other thing about that is I followed the national press real closely that weekend after we beat Virginia, and whether it was ESPN, CBS, NBC, Bleacher Report, whatever, every entity reported it as a 1,000th win. So, I mean, frankly, in the NCAA, they look tone deaf in this because every national media outlet reported it as Jim's 1,000th win. So there, to me, that was validation.
Could you tell us what the protocol is for concussions?
That's confidential.
Simplified form.
Pardon me?
A simplified form.
Well, it's, you know, if someone exhibits symptoms, we put them through a protocol. And it's, you know, it's, and if that, if they go through the protocol and they don't pass the protocol, then they're immediately, they are withheld from participation until the time that they do. I can't get into all the specifics and all the intricacies because there's confidentiality. That's part of that. But it's at the beginning process, if somebody exhibits the signs of, is they go through the protocol.
Is it time that the NCAA stop being ruled by rulers, lawyers, and that perhaps some people should talk about policy first and think about the student athlete and work, I mean, just scrap everything they have now and start over again?
Oh, my goodness. I do think is there needs to be more focus on student athlete welfare at the NCAA level. I do think the organization is overly bureaucratic. There's so many rules, and I really think if you got bright people together who had the experience in college athletics, You could write a rule book that, you know, that would govern and cover 99% of most instances, and would be something that could be it would be understandable to coaches and administrators. I mean, some of the things that you can and you can't do. I mean, they changed this, but, you know, like 4 years ago, you couldn't provide, you know, meals after a certain time to kids. I mean, start with common sense, right? Throw in a little, all right, student athlete welfare, and maybe start there. I don't see that. I don't see them doing that anytime soon, however.
Let's thank John Wildhack so much for joining us today. Thank you, John.
Thank you. Thank you. And again, we all invite you to come out Sunday at 5 o'clock, and we appreciate your support and your fandom. Thank you.